It's official. The Los Angeles Dodgers have too many good players. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, January 29th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to get to some of the really interesting non-roster invitees. I want to get to MLB The Show 25, and I want to get to another first baseman being available and one that's going to possibly undercut Pete Alonso's market a little bit. But before we get to all of that, the Los Angeles Dodgers, we now have contract information and everything on their signing of Kirby Yates. They are addressing the one real weakness that team had, which was the bullpen. They've signed both Tanner Scott, and now they've signed Kirby Yates. It's a one-year, $13 million deal, and there's two different escalators of $500,000 each, 50 appearances, 55 appearances. So Kirby Yates can earn up to $14 million next season. And you're in a really interesting spot now for the Dodgers because you had a full 40-man roster. And then now you have to add Kirby Yates. They're going to have to cut somebody or make a trade. And it's going to be a good player. There's not at this point, unless they just go ahead and eat the money on Chris Taylor, which they probably should, but unless they do that, they have to get rid of a good player to fit Kirby Yates on the 40-man roster. And that's not even counting Roky Sasaki eventually needing to be added, and then whatever you're going to end up doing with Clayton Kershaw when he does finally sign, because we know he's going to re-sign with the Dodgers like he always does. If you are an opposing team, who are you calling on to get from the Dodgers 40-man roster that you think there's a legitimate chance they might move that guy?
Yeah, I mean, if you're just in need of depth, like a team like the Marlins or White Sox, I would certainly be calling around for Chris Taylor. Just get him off the roster because you know that he's not going to play much, and you need guys that have some kind of major league experience. You have to field a team somehow. So Chris Taylor, probably for the Marlins or White Sox, they wouldn't have to give up much prospect capital for that, especially if they eat all the money.
I was about to say, I'd go one farther, and I'd say if they're willing to take the full $13 million on Chris Taylor, and there's a buyout of his option next year for $4 million, you can probably get the Dodgers to give you a good prospect in that deal, simply because you're taking that contract off of their hands and they don't have to eat that money. Obviously they have the money, but I'd argue you could go get Chris Taylor and say, we'll take all $13 million this year. We'll take the $4 million buyout next year. Give us a good player from your lower minors who's on your 40-man roster, and let's do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And plus they have that logjam in the outfield. A contending team might look at going after Andy Pages and seeing if they could pry him away from the Dodgers. It'd take a lot more than it would take the Marlins or White Sox to get Chris Taylor. But with the logjam that they have in that outfield, they've got to do something about that in order to get all the players that need ample amount of playing time, the playing time that they need. So there's multiple different players that could be on the move here pretty soon because pitchers and catchers report in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's the outfield situation is interesting for them, right? They bring back Teoscar. They had already signed Michael Conforto. They've kind of signaled Tommy Edman's going to be the center fielder this year versus playing shortstop. I do think he's better at short than center field. I do think he's much better at short than Mookie Betts, but yeah, we'll see if Mookie can be better with an offseason to prep instead of being thrown in during spring training. But so you've got Teoscar in right. You've got Conforto in left. Not the best defensive outfield, mind you. And then Pages, as of now, projects to be one of your bench guys along with Chris Taylor. Obviously, Mookie can kick out there, so you have coverage in a game. The only other outfielder on the 40-man roster right now is James Outman, who I think can still be a very good major league outfielder. It's just another situation. You have so many really good guys, and then behind Outman in the minors, Jesus De Paula is one of their top prospects. He's expected to be probably in double A. He's a corner outfielder this year. Zaire Hope looks to be like one of the best prospects in their system. He'll be probably starting off in high A this year. They got Mike Sirota via trade. He was a high draft pick last year. They got him from Cincinnati. He'll be probably starting off in and probably in high A. He was a college bat. They've got a ton of depth at this position. And if you, it doesn't always happen like this. If all of those guys were to make the majors, you'd have five outfielders trying to figure out where to play them all. So I could see going after one of those two, Outman or Pajes. I kind of feel like they'd be more willing. Like Pajes is probably the better of the two, but I think they're more willing. They'd be more willing to give up Outman. We'll see what happens. But either way, totally a logjam. I think I would be calling it about a pitcher, right? If you look at the rotation and you assume the rotation is going to be Snell, Yamamoto, Glasnow, Ohtani, Sasaki as your one through five, then you've only got one spot left for Tony Gonsolin and Dustin May. And both of them have worked in relief before. Gonsolin has 2 years of team control left and one minor league option. He's also 30. May is 27 with 1 year of control and no options left. But you also have a full bullpen, right? I kind of feel like if I could get one of those two guys, that's the deal I'd like to make. And if not, I mean, maybe you go out and you get Michael Grove, 28 years old. He's got 4 years of control left, one minor league option. They use him in relief, but he's a high octane arm that can absolutely, I still think, can be a starter. He just doesn't have the runway to do it in LA because of all of their rotation depth. There's guys, there's talented guys. It's a nice problem to have if you're LA, is there's more talented guys than 26 and 40 man roster spots. And maybe somebody else in the league can benefit a little bit from that.
Absolutely. I would love to see a guy like Bobby Miller or Tony Gonsolin go to a team like the Seattle Mariners or the Atlanta Braves just because of how good they are at developing pitching. And mm-hmm. one thing that people also forget about is the Philadelphia Phillies have a tendency of taking oft-injured pitchers and making them not so oft-injured, because Zach Wheeler has spent very minimal time on the injured list with the Phillies compared to how much time he missed with the New York Mets. Tony Gonsolin in red pinstripes would feed families.
One of the things I've noticed about Philly is those pitchers post. I remember as a lot of the listeners know, I'm credentialed to cover the Braves. We talked to Alex Anthopoulos before the winter meetings, and one of the things that he always points out, or he pointed out that time, is how valuable starts are. A guy that can post, a guy that can make starts. And the one thing that I kind of feel like is, you look at some of the guys that he's tried to acquire via free agency or trade. Dylan Cease, four straight years of 32 starts. He tried to sign Aaron Nola last offseason. Aaron Nola is another dude who just posts every single week. Every fifth or sixth day, he's making his start. He finishes the year with like 30 starts just about every year. So it's the opposite of a Dodgers philosophy, right? None of these guys, I feel like, are going to be good for 25 or 30 starts this year. But they're also incredibly talented, and they have the depth to weather that. Real quick, just for fun, before you look in Fangraphs roster resource, how many different closers do you think are listed for the Dodgers on their depth chart?
Ooh, closers are listed as closers. I'm going to say three.
It's four, and I think it's too low. Okay. They've got Tanner Scott, who had 22 saves last year. They've got Kirby Yates, who had 33 last year for the Rangers. They've got Blake Treinen, who only had one, but also had an ERA under two for the Dodgers. They've got Michael Kopech, who 15 saves last year, but he was also throwing a lot of high leverage innings once he got once he was acquired from the White Sox. And then Evan Phillips had 18 saves for the Dodgers last year, and he's listed as middle relief. So I honestly think, heck, Anthony Banda's on here as the second lefty in the pen as a middle reliever. He had two saves and an ERA of three last year for the Dodgers. I really do think that that like you could make the argument this team has five closers. For fantasy, it's gonna suck, right? A lot of these dudes will give you good ratios, but you just don't have any guarantee that any of these guys will get anything like the save numbers you would need to be competitive in fantasy. So just, oh, and that's all without Bruce Dar Gratterall, who had shoulder surgery in November, is probably going to miss most of this year, but just the most casual 100 miles an hour you've ever seen in your life. It's like he's playing catch with people and has been a guy that has closed games for them before. So in just an overwhelming amount of riches. Fun fact is they've got these five guys all going to be out for a while or the entire year. They can get five spots on the by moving these guys to the 60-day IL when pitchers and catchers report. They just if they want to add now, they have to get rid of somebody. If they wait to add until these guys are eligible to get moved to the IL, you can only move a guy to the 60-day IL in along with another transaction. You can't do it just to do it. But if you sign, say, Clayton Kershaw, you can move a guy to the 60-day IL to make room for Kershaw on the roster. They've got five guys they can all move whenever they want to. So when everybody reports and you're able to start putting guys on the IL, they'll have flexibility. Right now is the time where they don't really. I imagine that's where Roki's roster spot will come from, is somebody going on the IL like a Gavin Stone, a River Ryan, a Kyle Hurt, who is hurt, Emmett Sheehan, things like that. Okay, I want to move on to an interesting AL-NL East connection here with a recent signing. Dylan Carlson was signed by the Baltimore Orioles. It's a one-year, $975,000 deal. There's a $25,000 bonus for getting to 200 plate appearances. Very small bonus, right? Carlson was a top 10 prospect in baseball in 20 and 2021. And then, you know, with the Cardinals, he's just kind of every year he's gotten worse. Was traded to the Rays last year. Finished the season at negative 1.2 war between these two teams. Strikeout rate of 29.9% last season, worst of his career. Just a lot of really rough numbers for Dylan Carlson. He's obviously, given how low that bonus is, he's obviously going to be a backup in the outfield. But what I think this does is this gives them the flexibility to make another move. And Heston Kerstedt plays outfield and first base. Ryan Mountcastle plays first base as well. One of these guys, I feel like, can be traded. Kirsten's probably more valuable, but he also has 5 years of team control left. I'd probably trade Mountcastle with 2 years left. Which destination makes more sense for Mountcastle to get moved? The Seattle Mariners or the New York Mets?
Both teams need a first baseman. I think that with the way that the rest of the divisions line up as far as the American League West for the Mariners and the National League East for the Mets, I think that the Mariners would be the better option for Mountcastle, just because it's more of an open division than the National League East is, especially if the Braves are more healthy in the National League East, like everybody expects them to be this year. Then they've got the National League East on lock, and then the Mets are not going to catch up with the Philadelphia Phillies in second. So it's the American League West is more up for grabs right now, with the Astros taking a step back. There's no real locked in favorite in the American League West. So I think Mountcastle would be a lot more beneficial for the Mariners to finally get a first baseman and better offense in their lineup.
Yeah, I do think he also works better because that's on a great power park. He has 91 career home runs in 2,300 plate appearances, right? His 162 game average is 26 homers a season. But he also, the last two seasons, has batted 270 with an on-base, you know, in the low threes. And I do think they had been so bad with strikeouts. Like, that team strikes out more than anybody else in baseball. That adding a guy that, you know, his strikeout rates aren't, like, amazing, mind you, right? I think last year he ran, like, 22% strikeout rate. That's two straight years. Legitimately right at MLB average. But that would be a huge improvement over where Seattle was last year and the year before that. And so that kind of deal would make a lot of sense. The same time, we saw the Mets are, like, hey, I've had discussions about Ryan Mountcastle and Spencer Torkelson to try to figure out their first base. I do think if I'm from the Mariners perspective, I'm sorry, from the Orioles perspective, they need starting pitching. They need, and like, they have guys, right? They've got Zach Eflin, they've got Charlie Morton, they've got Dean Kramer, they've got Tomoyuki Sugano. I like Grayson Rodriguez to maybe take a leap into that number one spot this year. But if they could add a guy who could be a number one, number two, number three, having watched Charlie Morton the last 4 or 5 years, he's not a number three pitcher, but that's where he's listed on their depth chart, number three or number four. You have a lot of, you know, Eflin's probably a three. Grayson Rodriguez is a two, I'd argue. And then you've got a lot of 4 or 5 guys in the back with Morton, Kramer, Sugano, things like that. If you can go to Seattle, you probably have to give up more than just Mountcastle. But if you can get a starting pitcher, even like, you know, even one of their ones that they like the least, right? I don't think they're going to pay for Luis Castillo, but right, maybe you can get a Brian Wu. Maybe you can get one of these AAA guys, you know, Emerson Hancock or something like that. I just think if it's me, if I'm the Orioles, I'm offering Mountcastle plus a prospect or two to try to pry a guy like a Brian Wu out of Seattle. I think that's a better deal for me than going to the Mets and hoping that whatever prospect pitcher they give me can be a guy that can step into my rotation this year.
Yeah, 100%. And the Orioles and Mariners have already been linked this offseason in trade talks surrounding their pitchers. It was surrounding Luis Castillo, but I think that if that was going to happen, it would have happened already, especially with Mountcastle being most likely part of it. So I agree that it probably won't be Luis Castillo. I do like the idea of Brian Wu in Baltimore. I'm really high on Brian Wu. He's a very good pitcher, and he would improve the Orioles rotation tremendously and pretty much cement them as the second best team in the American League East.
Yeah, I don't think he's a one, no. But I think him and Grayson as your top two is a better option than him and Eflin and Rodriguez as your top two. The reason I'm doubtful on Castillo is new owner David Rubenstein, at the World Economic Forum, which I don't really know why he's talking about this stuff there, said that he wishes they would have a salary cap in baseball. And like, buddy, we thought you were going to be the guy who would finally spend money in Baltimore. And already you're over here like, I wish we had a salary cap. We can't do this. You're a billionaire. This should be it. If you buy a team in the 2000s, you have to be a billionaire to do it. Frustrating. That's why I don't see them getting Luis Castillo. They're just apparently averse to spending money. Yeah. But I do think, kind of to your point, that Brian Wu does more for the Orioles than any of the starting pitcher options that New York would be willing to give up, right? As they are trying to contend in a very tough division, they probably would want to lead with one of their top prospects, a Brandon Sproat, a Blade Tidwell, somebody like that. And that's just not the same as what you would get if you were to go to Seattle and add prospects to the deal to get a better MLB caliber guy. Two things real quick, I guess, before we go. One, there's been some really interesting non-roster invitees going to spring training. Boston's group stood out to me, right? Shortstop Marcelo Meyer, top prospect in baseball, Roman Anthony, an outfielder. And then you had some really interesting guys you noticed in Miami's list.
Yeah, Albert Almora Jr. is a non-roster invitee. They didn't even announce that he was a minor league signing. Nobody knew about it.
They just dropped it. Oh, yeah, by the way, he's coming to spring training.
Right, yeah. Nobody knew about it until they put out their non-roster invitee list. And he's more than likely going to make the major league roster because who else is going to play in the outfield for the Miami Marlins in 2025? And he's going to be a good addition for them, at least defensively. And it's going to be really his first real shot in the majors in quite some time. So I really like him there. And I also liked Jake Lamb with San Fran. He's a non-roster invitee for San Francisco. Yeah. He hasn't played in the majors since 2023, but he's a first baseman. Or he can play first base, and they need a first baseman. And when he did play every day back in the mid-2010s, He had a 29 home run season and a 30 home run season, and he won't do that in San Francisco, especially in his mid 30s. But yeah, he could still add more offensive production to their lineup, which they very much need.
Wade Jr., right?
Right, and they very much need more offense because right now their offense is anchored by Matt Chapman, Willy Adames, and the boys. So they need more offense, and they really need a first baseman. So I like that one too. And the Brewers have a really nice non-roster invitee list with a bunch of major league caliber talent. Like, they've got Jake Bowers, they've got Jorge Alfaro. Let's see.
Davey I've always Garcia. Liked Jorge Alfaro as a catcher that can play other positions and had decent speed. I've always liked Jorge Alfaro for that respect right there. So yeah, I feel you on that.
Yeah, and the Brewers love speed. We know that. So there's a really good chance that he's going to break camp with a major league club, even if it's just to be a pinch runner because of how fast he is as a catcher. But there's a lot of interesting non-roster invitees around there.
Their infield position battles are going to be great after losing Willy Adames. Joey Ortiz is really a shortstop that was playing third base last year. Like, from an offensive perspective, not a ton of power. I think he was a positive hitter, 104 WRC plus, but like, it just, I like him better at short. But then, you know, Bryce Terang at second, it's like, okay, Caleb Durbin could play short. They acquired him in that Devin Williams deal. Do you leave Ortiz at third? A guy like Oliver Dunn could be somebody. You could always have a veteran signing, something like that. I do think for third baseman, they didn't really bring in a ton of guys on their NRI list, like Raynel Delgado. Top prospect Brock Wilken, I don't believe is an NRI, which surprises me. I figured that their top prospect, they'd want to see if he was ready, but he was a 2023 draft pick. So it kind of makes sense that they're slow playing that a little bit. Going back to your Miami thing real quick, I'm really intrigued about Matt Mervis. I was back on the Prospect Podcast. I was a big believer in Matt Mervis. They acquired him from the Cubs back in December. And first base is wide open after the trade of Jake Berger to the Rangers. And so, like, right now you kind of pencil in, I guess, Jonah Bride. They've got Devison De Los Santos who can play first. Liam Hicks, the catcher they got in the Rule 5 draft, I think from Detroit. I thought he was with Texas, but Roster Resource says Detroit. He can play some first base as well. They did invite a ton of first basemen. Matt Mervis on the 40-man roster, but Nathan Martorella is an NRI. Troy Johnston's an NRI. There's a ton of options here for first base, but I do think I've always liked Matt Mervis. He obviously didn't work out very well in Chicago, 2 years ago. That's why they got Michael Bush before last year. Curious to see what happens there. This is more Marlins talk than I ever thought we'd have on this show. We're going to do the divisional previews and looking at some of the teams in each division. And I know when we discussed the NL East, we said we weren't even going to talk about the Marlins. Like, it was going to be the three big teams, and we'd fit the Nationals into the back end of a show somewhere else. So fun there. Real quick, before we go, in MLB The Show 25 has been announced, and there's two interesting things about this. The first one, there are three cover athletes. Ellie De La Cruz dropped the Instagram video leaking that he was the cover athlete, and then they kind of went around and then messed with all of us by also saying, hey, Gunnar Henderson and Paul Skeens are also on the cover, which is just kind of super cool to the trio. The trio there are three of the most exciting players in the game, right? Makes sense. Those three guys are on there. And then also, MLB The Show 25 is not going to be available on last-gen consoles and is not going to be on Xbox Game Pass. So is the yearly update of the game enough for you on March 18th to go buy the game? Or is that something where, hey, having it on Game Pass was convenient, but I'm not going to pay to have a copy of this game?
So up until last year, I have bought every MLB The Show since the game started coming out in 2006.
Wow. Let me guess, it was the seasons killed it for you.
Yeah. Well, no, honestly, I don't play Diamond Dynasty all that much. I like Diamond Dynasty well enough, but when I do play it, I play the offline Diamond Dynasty modes like Conquest. I love Conquest. But most of what I play is Road to the Show and Franchise, and they just haven't really done anything over the years to improve those modes. They've been stagnant since 2018, 2019. And so I've just, after last year, again, no real improvements. They did add last year where in Road to the Show, you can play as a female character for your career mode. But I mean, for me personally, I'm not going to play as a female character. So that's not a big enough of a change for me to buy the game. So last year I skipped out for the first time, but this year with it being current gen only, and with Road to the Show adding high school to your career, to where you start your career in high school, I am going to buy the game this year, and it will be a pre-order for me, and it'll probably be the deluxe edition, even though it's not on Game Pass. But being current gen only is fantastic. It's going to increase the gameplay and the graphics tremendously. I don't know if you saw the EA PGA Tour game, how they're only current gen. They took 2 years off, and they went from being all consoles to just current gen. And the graphics
looks so much better.
It is so fantastic, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, on the Road to the Show thing, and you're going to kind of note there, of those three guys, Ellie De La Cruz was an international free agent, so he signed at age 16. Gunnar Henderson was a prep draftee out of Selma, Alabama. Fun fact, was actually committed to my Auburn Tigers. And so he's come back to the campus before, and they recognized him during halftime of a basketball game and things like that. He was committed to Auburn for a couple of years before he was drafted. Huh. And then Paul Skeens, obviously Air Force and then LSU. So you can do, I assume what they're going to let you do is they're going to let you do any of the three. You can start in high school, you can start in college, or maybe you can start as an international free agent. I don't quite know how that's going to work, but it's another level. It's not just when you create your player, you start in double A. Now you can start even lower than that and work your way all the way up. And I assume play to figure out where you're going to get drafted, which will be interesting, like where in the draft you would get selected. So that'll be fun. It's harder for me to think about. I have to buy it when it was free for me last year. I'll probably end up getting it. I've never been I'm a huge baseball guy. I've never been a huge baseball game person. I did play a lot of it this year on Game Pass, like being on Game Pass. Since it was added to Game Pass, I've played a lot of it. It's mostly offline stuff. I mostly do the offline Diamond Dynasty stuff. I do a little bit of, like, I do create a player and play in the minors a little bit, right? See if I can be a knuckleballer who also plays left field, kind of little thing like that. But I'm intrigued to see what it looks like, and I'm going to give it a shot, and we'll see. I'll probably download a demo, see how it is, and I might just go ahead and break down and buy it and enjoy all the new updates. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, January 29th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.